name's Annette Lakovich, and I've been coaching people for over 14 years in sales communication and different techniques to help them better their sales in business. And there's a common trait between the ones who succeed and a common trait to the ones who fail miserably. Now, what I've learned is it doesn't matter how many fancy techniques I can impart to an individual. Sometimes they're just not thriving and converting sales, and sales being either face-to-face or over the phone, it doesn't matter. Most of the time, it's because that person's not successful because of their mindset. You see, I think I've found the missing link in what actually makes a real salesperson thrive and the one that just barely survives, and it comes down to the self-esteem. You see, in sales, and let's face it, in business in general, you have to have thick skin. And if you don't have thick skin, then you grow pretty quickly. Otherwise, you shoot back down further than where you actually started from, because you do get many bumps along the way. And I'm speaking from experience myself. I'd like to say I've had my best education on what not to do in business. One of those things is not crying out for help when I needed to. Thinking I already knew everything and nobody else probably would know how to help me, or getting my nose out of joint if someone actually gave me some feedback, especially when it wasn't invited. And, you know, I'm sure for some of you, you've actually been there and done that too. And some of you, you're actually going through that now. And that's why I've created Billionaire Babes and Empower Her. To have women feel comfortable about getting help, gaining education, and most importantly, obliterating insecurities and improving your self-esteem. And that's why I'm really here. I'm here because I want to help you win. So let's have a quick look at what I mean when I say mindset and skill set, because I talked about that before. So let me just get into that and make that clear. Mindset is how you think, it's who you are, and what makes you tick, and most importantly, it's the meaning that you place on the past experiences in your life. And this all makes up your self-esteem, your character, your values, and your beliefs. Now, the problem with a lot of training is that they work you at a conscious level. So when you're learning the information, it makes total sense. However, something just hasn't resonated with you deeper at the core. And I don't mean that day that you're learning, because when you're learning, you are in a positive state. Your frequency level is at theta, and beta is when you're using concentration and you're learning new things, and also at beta is when you release dopamine, which makes you feel incredibly great, and it's why a lot of people get addicted to learning and seminars and become these seminar junkies. What also happens is, after these seminars, a lot of people can have a massive low. And that's because the dopamine obviously has stopped, because they're not learning, they've just gone back. They're still in beta, by the way. However, it hasn't resonated with you in your core, because we've only changed stuff at the surface level. Think about it this way. If your mind was the ship, and there was a captain and the crew, and let's just say the captain sits on top of the deck and the captain can see out to the sea, and then you have the crew, and the crew are running around inside the ship and they actually can't see outside to the sea. Let's just say they're in under the deck, under the water. Now, if there wasn't rapport between the captain and the crew, there'd be a high chance that some things might not get done. And that's what happens with your conscious and subconscious brain. Your conscious mind wants to do something. However, if it's not in complete rapport with your unconscious brain, meaning your deep-seated beliefs, your values, your characters, the meaning that you've put on your past in life, proves otherwise, then your unconscious mind, or some people call it subconscious, are not in rapport. So you bounce back or fling back, just like a rubber band, into your old ways or old beliefs. That's where hypnosis comes in. Hypnosis works with you as an alpha or theta brainwave. It's a more relaxed state, and we can really tap in and help unleash and unlock any of those limiting beliefs that you've held on to. Some of them you might not even realize are there, and they pop up, and it's like magic. What I also will be sharing with you is obviously techniques that you can do on yourself and also activities that you'll be doing, because there's going to be some times, let's face it, we won't be doing hypnosis on these types of recordings. So I'm going to give you techniques that you can do and tasks that you can do that can really help unlock and have a really good look at what's actually happening inside. So for you to really gain massive motion going forward, then go ahead and get started on Empower Her or the Billionaire Babes Club. And that way we can really start working together one-on-one through coaching and through the different programs and go into the hypnosis stuff and have it much more tailored. However, let's just get back on track now and let's just have a look at the 10 top reasons why people don't succeed in sales and in business. So, the first one we can cross off the list, which is number one, which is conscious and unconscious mind are not in rapport, which we need to look at your values, your beliefs, your self-esteem, because that's the one thing that normally holds people back. Number two, rapport over process. What does that mean? Well, I've noticed a lot of women, we are rapport monsters. We love making friends, having relationships, and then there's some women that are really scared of actually creating relationships as well. However, when we go into sales, a woman is so focused on building the rapport and creating a great relationship that by the end of showing her product, she's never actually got any type of buying questions to get that customer to purchase. And then a lot of females then don't even bother to ask if the customer will buy because they're scared of breaking rapport. They think that the customer is going to turn around and not like them anymore and break all the rapport that they've done. Which brings me to step three. Do you have a sequence of strategically placed questions throughout your presentation? Or do you just ramble about your product? You see, one of the biggest mistakes women do in business is they don't have a lot of buying questions. So at the end of the presentation, does your customer feel so compelled in wanting to buy that they just say to you, okay, great, tell me how much it is. How do I actually get this or start this? A lot of the time, no. Because you haven't had any structure to your sales process. You need to create some processes, some structure for you to be able to have some qualifying questions. Like, for example, to the customer, what is the main reason why you think this business, this article, this product, this service will help you most? Questions like, what do you think the main thing this product will actually do for you? What would be one thing that this product would help alleviate? What problem do you think you're facing now that this product or service could actually help alleviate that problem? How long have you had that problem for? Wow, and where is it affecting you? Perhaps, you know, professionally or even personally. Because let's face it, even though we're in business, it can affect us personally. So if you've got clients, it's the same thing. So how does it affect you professionally or personally with having this problem? Or how do you think it will affect you professionally or personally with fixing this problem? And have some structured questions. Here is my test to you. First task, write out 25 questions. 25 questions that you can ask the customer to qualify them to actually be a great buying machine. 25 of them. I've just given you a few now. What is your customer's main goals? What's something wrong that's happening with them now? How long have they been experiencing that for? How long have they been leaving it in actually not doing anything about fixing that problem? How good a question would that be? And what about this? What's actually stopped you from doing it prior? Wouldn't that be great to know if the customer's had financial problems? Because then you need to know that later on, working things into their budget. Step four, are they emotional questions or are they logical questions? So before you go ahead and you write those 25 questions, make sure they're a mixture of highly emotional questions, emotive stuff. Things like those questions I have said before, what does this mean to you? How does it affect you? And then also you need some logical questions. So make sure when you write out those 25, make sure there's some logical questions there too. Because a wise man once said, people buy emotionally and they justify with logic. Think about it, ladies. We buy a pair of shoes because they're great. They might be hot pink. And then we justify. We think we can wear them with these jeans, with these pants, with this place, with this outfit. And we justify our purchase logically. Your customers do the same thing. It is a natural human behavior. Every decision we make goes into the emotional cortex first. And we get emotionally fulfilled. And then it whips around to your logical side. And it starts asking questions like, will I use it? Will it actually say what they say it's going to do? How many times will I use this product? Will this product make me be able to get where I need to be? Let's just say qualifications or services or products you could be selling. Would I find it cheaper somewhere else? Can I actually afford it? What is my budget? So a mixture of all these types of questions, we want to know at the start. So when the customer walks away, they walk away with your product, not walking away with unanswered questions that they're too scared to share with you, which is why it's important for you to build rapport in step two. And that's why it's important for you to have those questions in step three, because without those two, the customer might not have the questions answered, but they've got all the rapport, or you've got all these heavy-ended questions and not a rapport for them to share you the problem. So they go hand in hand. Make sense? Okay, step five. Everything that you are doing is finding the customer's problem. Everything you are doing in qualifying the customer in why they need your product is that you're finding the customer's problem. The customer purchases things when they need things. When they need things, there's a high amount of emotional pain around it. There's two human motivators in human behavior. There's one motivator where it's the motivation of avoiding any type of pain, meaning I can't handle this anymore. I've got to stop what I'm doing. I hate feeling like this. And that's one motivator, what makes a customer come to you and inquire. Then you've got the up motivator, which is the mover towards pleasure. I love feeling like this. I want to have this. I need this. This is going to be great for me. And you've got all these seeking pleasure customers. However, if you are with a customer, there is normally one motivator that makes them get off their butt quicker. And it is their problem. It is their pain. A customer will do absolutely anything to get away from their problem and fix it if the pain is high enough. Now, I'm not saying for you to go around and create pain. The pain is there. You just need to be able to ask the right questions in step three and step four, and that will help alleviate and find out what the real problem is. So then you guys can propel that customer forward and using your products and alleviating their problems. If you do not get the sale, always ask yourself at the end, what was my customer's problem? What was their compelling reason for them to want to buy my product? And if you don't know those answers, then you know that you need to start sharpening up the sword and asking some questions to really uncover that problem. This would be a question to really uncover some problems with a customer. How is it affecting you now by not having XYZ? What would it mean to you, professionally or personally, if this continues to happen? How would it actually affect your business? How would it affect your staff? How would it affect your marriage, your children, your home life, by not having this problem fixed? If you can get those questions answered, you will get customers bleeding out their problems and they will feel compelled to purchase. Which then brings us to step six, asking for the sale. Do you know how many people go through a fantastic presentation and they don't actually ask the customer to buy? It's crazy, I know. And you're probably saying, that's me. And if it is, it's okay. We can fix it. You need to learn to ask for the money no matter what. You know, I had one of my favourite teachers. His name's Steve Jensen. And I remember him saying to me once, and that even if you get an objection in the middle of qualification, for example, if a customer says to you that they never make a business decision without asking their husband first, still, always at the very end of the sale, ask for their decision anyway. Let me share with you, speaking from experience. After I learned that from Steve, I had a customer that did tell me that she makes decisions with her husband. Her husband was involved in making the decision financially. I then proceeded and showed her the products anyway. After I showed her the products, I went through the price presentation. At the end of the price presentation, I said to her, so Leanne, what about the two? What do you think you're leaning more towards? Is it the starter pack, which is just going to get you on the way? Or is it really that business builder, which is really looking at the big side of the business, really propelling your business forward and really giving you the life that you want? And she says, I think I'll go for the business builder. I remembered that she had the objection from before, but she just said she wanted to go for the business builder. So I then went on to say, well, great. All we need to do is fix up a bit of paperwork and take care of that. Is that going to come out of a check account or a savings account? She said, savings. Savings it is. Let's get you on your way and let's get your business thriving. Are you excited? She said, yes. Great. Let's do it. And we moved on. So that, I tell you what, has changed the way that I close a sale. I ask for a sale all the time. It might be a soft way. Which one are you leaning more towards? Is it which out of the two would you prefer? You just need to change your language. And language we will go into later. It is so important. Number seven, reducing all possible objections. Now, I've mentioned this to you before. Do you ask questions like, how long have they been putting it off for? How have they been thinking about it? What stopped them from starting sooner? What is their budget that they're leaning towards? Can they fit this in time-wise, frequency-wise? How are they going to be able to juggle it? All these questions are, one, logical questions, and it's the logical reasons what holds our customers back. However, it's also reducing the possible objections at the end. You see, if you tell me what your budget is, if you tell me you've been thinking about it for 5 years, or let's just say 2 months, I'll have a discussion then and there about why you've been thinking about it for 2 months or 5 years. And has that been long enough for them to be thinking about it? Great, it's so great that they've come in and inquired today and we can get them on their road to success. I can reduce that objection substantially right now before hitting it at the end when we go to do the price presentation. Because let me tell you, you don't want to get objections after your price presentation, because that's when most people that don't even want to do sales feels like they're selling, because you're trying to save the sale. So find out all the possible objections up front. Number eight, planning for success. How many of you gals out there actually know how many people you need to have booked in every day to hit your target number amount of sales at end of week? Or how many people you need to see and speak to get your target end of month? There are different formulas that you can use to plan for your success. So let's write this down. You need to know what your goal is first, obviously. So you need to know what your target is. And target might be the number of transactions you need, or it could be a financial number, how much money you need to make. Divided by your close rate, meaning how well you close on the day with your customers, what the conversion rate is. And then you need to know your show rate. And your show rate is how many people actually show up and see you face to face after you've made that time to see them, or how many people show up on your website or show up in inquiries for you to be able to present to them face-to-face or over the phone. If you get your goal divided by your close rate, divided by your show rate, that will give you the number of people or appointments you need to have booked in. If you don't know your percentages, well, perhaps there should be a step 11 in this. You need to know your percentages. If you don't, book in for a coaching session with me. We can run through your whole business and really help narrow down. Because if you don't know your numbers, your business, it's not going to thrive. That's the easiest thing I can say. You need to know your numbers. All right, moving on. Number 9, time management. You've got two different types of people in life. You've got a person that is called an in-time person. And my husband's an in-time person. He gets so caught up in the moment that he will be doing something and time just gets away from him. And he'll have so much booked in for the day that instead of planning out the time, he sort of runs from one appointment to the next, and he fits everything in, but it's really quite stressful. On the other side, there's through-time people. And through-time people, like myself, they're very planned down to the minute. They know exactly how much time they need to get ready to go to the next appointment, how much time it might take. They'll add a little bit of extra time for traffic. And this person's very planned with time management. Wouldn't it be great to be able to switch them when you need them? You see, in business, it'd be great to be a through-time person, wouldn't you agree? So you can have a great time management plan, you're not stressed, you've got everything planned out to the minute, and your day is so organised, and organised for success, which actually means you normally fit in about 25% extra in the day because you are planned. And then what about on holidays? How great would it be to flip the switch and turn back into an in-time person and be totally in the moment and just go with the flow, hey? So make sure with your time management, at the start of each day, sit down and just take a couple of minutes to write out what you need to do for the day. Sounds easy enough, but hey, I know a lot of people that know it, but they don't use it. Open up your diary. If you don't have a diary, get one. And write out all the things. And then the next step is for you to prioritise it. So everything that has to be done today, absolutely no negotiation, you'll mark them as an A. And then B, it's necessary, it gets done. However, A is more important. C means that if it doesn't get done today, that's okay, you can move it to the next page. And D stands for delegated. If it doesn't need to be done, why are you doing it when you're trying to grow your business and your success? Otherwise, keep pushing it back until it comes to an A. Then with your A's, if you've got a few A's on your sheet, mark it A1, A2, A3. Did you know there's a saying, 1 minute of planning equals 10 minutes of results. So isn't it worth just spending 5 minutes of your morning and getting everything out in your head, out on paper, and have it planned and prioritized? Because there's what we call the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle. And the Pareto principle is this. 80% of what you do is only going to give you 20% of your results. And 20% of what you do gives you 80% results. Meaning there's going to be some jobs that you keep putting off. And you keep putting off because they're hard to do. And that's why you're putting them off. But think about it. If they're hard to do, it's normally because they've got a fair bit of weight to them financially. So work with your 80-20 rule. Prioritize. Do the things that need to be done first that give you the greatest financial return. And leave all the smaller jobs that are easier to do, push them back. Because they're easy to do, push them back to the end of the day and eat the ugliest, hardest frog first. There's a great book out there if you're into your reading. It's called Eat That Frog. It's from Brian Tracy, and it is an awesome read for you guys that are suffering from time management issues, and perhaps you might be more an in-time person instead of a through-time person. And to finish off, number 10. Something is better than nothing. That saying I use for a lot of my clients when I look at the options that they have for their clients. You see, you need to look at the level that your customer is. Sometimes customers aren't ready to take that big leap. They need to either build a relationship or trust with your business, or financially they're not ready to fully commit yet, or they're not at the level yet to take that big jump. So you have to make sure, guys, that you have different levels of entry for them to come into your business. So give your customers some options that they can actually come on board and be a part of your business. However, the financial investment isn't as great. Obviously, the return isn't going to be as great either, but it's just starting to build that relationship. You could get a customer on board instead of selling a big package that gets them started for a whole year with you. Why don't you have a low entry or a no entry campaign? Get them to sign up to your newsletters. Get them to sign up to, say, a monthly membership. And have it as a very low entry. Have it something as small as $5, something that everyone can afford, and it's worth them investing just to suss it out. And then you start to build that relationship, and if you're good enough and great enough, you will then get their trust and have them qualified as a proper customer for them to actually convert over later on. These are all the tips for top 10 reasons why women don't succeed in sales. I've got a lot more, so you're going to hear a lot more from me later on. But I want to thank you so much for listening. And why don't you now just go straight on to that task I gave you, which was write out 25 questions that you can use in your sales process, emotional questions and logical questions. So by the time that customer sees your prices, they've already purchased and made 25 decisions. They don't have to walk away and make these decisions and ask themselves these questions because you've already asked them. Guys, keep shining bright, be brilliant, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.